When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi guys, it's me, Julia. I just battled some food poisoning, and can I tell you guys that that was no joke. I am never taking my health for granted again. And before that happened, I interviewed an author named Brianna McCabe. Brianna wrote a book called The Red Flags I Should Have Ignored. So obviously her and I chatted about red flags, our relationships with our bodies and the need for validation, and how to handle those intimacy conversations in the bedroom. This episode is so great and so important. I think you're going to love it. Here's Brianna. I am so excited to record with today's guest. She is the author of the book, The Red Flags I Should Have Ignored, Brianna McCabe. Welcome to Pretty Much Done.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to just like dive in and talk to you.
I'm so excited. You sent me your book. I'm going to show it here if anyone is curious, but you were like, you have to get the book in physical copy. And you wrote a little note and you said, hopefully your listeners will be pretty much done ignoring red flags. So if any of you who are listening get one takeaway from this interview, it's that we need to stop ignoring red flags.
Yeah. And I think it's like such a thing. It's such a key buzzword, sensationalized term, but I don't think people understand the brevity that they carry when you actually ignore them. So hopefully we can kind of convey that throughout this convo today.
Yeah. So tell me, in the book, like, you talk about having different jobs, you talk about being a writer, but I'm curious what the journey was to take you from becoming like, I think you had like a marketing role and then now you are a writer. Like, tell us a little bit about how this book started.
So I actually still do marketing and I'm also a professor and also an author. I know it's like super hyper independent, single 30-year-old vibe, I guess, but I've been a hard worker. But so what fueled the book was I always loved writing and it was always just an innate skill that I had throughout school. And I always thought one day I wanted to write a book, but I didn't know exactly about what. And I went through a really, really, really unhealthy and I guess you could say toxic without being too cliche relationship that just utterly broke me and destroyed me and ripped apart everything that I thought I was and who I was. And I thought not only did he hate me, but others hated me, but worst of all, I hated myself for even allowing myself to get into a situation that was so horrible to me mentally, physically, sexually, emotionally, all of that. But it brought me to like a really rock bottom of a place that when I was in my like late 20s that I didn't know I would ever be able to get out of. I was kind of in a depression for a few months. And to get out of that, I went to therapy. Thankfully, my friends were like, you need to go. So I went the first session, you know, usually you have like an onboarding or like they'll ask you questions. And I just like, let her have it. I was like, girl, like, this is where I'm at. And she was like, listen, you know, you really need to do something that you feel like will fill you up again. And she's like, so what is that for you? And I was like, for me, it's just like writing. So she's like, start writing. So I started writing and it was poems at first about how much I hated this guy and I wished him nothing but hell. And then I just started kind of elaborating on that and what I went through and then how I ended up there. So I started working my way backwards and it ended up becoming like this book that at first I thought was just going to be more of like a memoir. But then when I connected with my publisher, she was like, Bree, there's some serious nuggets in here that if you just reframe it a little bit, it can really become like a powerful tool for others who go through similar experiences. So that's when it became this self-help workbook.
Yeah, I love it because it is a workbook. Like after each chapter, or even after like certain passages, you're like, here was the red flag that I ignored. Here's what I should have told myself in the moment. Here's why I forgive myself. And then there are kind of like questions at the end of each chapter that ask you to reflect, because all of us have done this too. I feel like if you're single or have been single for a while, like you have found yourself in these situations. It is just part of the journey of singledom and dating. I'm curious, the piece about the relationship, when you kind of break it down, first of all, how long did you guys date and what was really the impetus you think for why you found yourself in this relationship? And I love when someone finds themselves out of a situation. It's kind of why I started this podcast, like out of a situation and turning their lemons into lemonade, like, you know, your pain into resilience.
Yeah. So I was with him on and off, hot and cold, for about 3 years throughout the pandemic. So I know a lot of relationships kind of hit rocky moments, but I think to give a very high level, he was somebody who battled with addiction and was in recovery, but he was really early on into his journey. So I think he had a lot of unhealed demons on his own time that he kind of had to figure out. And then I was also, looking back, I've always struggled with weight. I kind of yo-yo, I'm up, I'm down. I've been bullied for my weight. So it's something I've always kind of struggled with. But when I met him, I was in this area where I was starting to feel the healthiest and the sexiest and like the slimmest that I've ever felt. But I still battled with body dysmorphia. So it was just like this recipe for disaster, if you will, because I met him when I wasn't healed. He met me when he was still going through a lot of what he had to deal with based on, you know, actions and behaviors when he was in active addiction. And together we kind of just spiraled. And it was like the relationship itself almost became a drug to both of us. It was like when we were together, we were just like, it was like in our little bubble, it was very intoxicating. And it was like, wow, we love each other. But then when we were apart, everything spiraled and my insecurities came in, and the way that he treated me was just miserable. And there was all of these signs that I saw in him, but also in myself, where very early on, I should have just left the situation, but I didn't. And then the longer you're in it, the more entrapped you became. So I was with him on and off again for like 3 years. And in the book, essentially what the catalyst was that I ended up getting pregnant with him when we were kind of in this stint of really, really bad fighting. And I've never been pregnant before. It was something that I didn't even know I could do because I have PCOS. So I was always told I was infertile. So it was a lot of emotions, especially being with someone that your family hates, your friends hate, like me every other day I hated. It was just like, it was horrible, but then it was also beautiful. It was just a lot of emotions. And then the way that he treated me once I told him that I was pregnant, and we weren't trying, but it was like that makeup breakup sex type of thing. The way he treated me, and then it ended up being a very complicated pregnancy. I was going through a miscarriage, and the way that he just like left me and discarded me and made me feel like I was the worst person on this planet. He told me every day he prayed that I would miscarry, and I ultimately did. And then hearing these words repeatedly was just like, how the hell did I end up here with somebody like this? And what role did I play? It took a lot. It took a lot of self-reflection and a lot of healing, but girl, I was not well for a while. I'll tell you that.
I mean, we have so much overlap because I also struggled with my weight my entire life. Right now, I moved to Texas and I'm like, I'm gaining weight. And as someone who's done so much work on herself, I still am battling this body dysmorphia and these feelings. I totally understand the yo-yo dieting. And then I understand what it's like to feel really good in your skin and then feel this codependency on needing validation. And you talk a lot about it in the book. And you wrote a different scenarios. But I'm curious, do you think when you started doing the work and you started doing the healing, the need for validation stemmed from the body stuff for you? Was that really where it was, the root of it was?
I think one of the variables, definitely. Just because, like, if you go back to adolescent years, and I was bigger in comparison to other people, I always envy the girls who maybe bloomed a little earlier and had like the full busts and the curves and the hips. And they were just like the epitome of like every man's gaze. And then there was just me who fulfilled more of like the funny sister type of role. And I always wanted to feel wanted like those other girls. I always wanted to, you know, be the one that every guy chased after. But they also had cons that came with it because I think guys over-sexualized them. So I think from my perspective, yeah, weight was definitely something that impacted me wanting to feel validated. But I do think it's very multi-layered. Like I grew up with my dad pretty much abandoned us. So I had daddy issues, as cliche as that sounds. I grew up in a very unhealthy family dynamic with a stepfather. I mean, there's so many variables when you kind of peel back even just like my childhood. But then I think too, like culturally speaking, right? I think females, like there's so much of an emphasis, right? Like I'm single right now. All of my friends are getting married. The thousands of dollars I'm spending on like these bachelorette trips and the bridal showers and the engagement parties. And like, it's a beautiful thing. We're celebrating their love and it's great. But there's so much emphasis on the woman is finally chosen. Like, let's celebrate her. And then it's like, but for the single girlies, like, what are we celebrating? I don't want to sound like a hater, but it's just like, societally speaking, I think a lot of pressure is put on us as females to be a wife and to, you know, be a mother. And without that, who are you? So that's another layer, but that's also another rant we could go down.
Yeah, we can do it because honestly, we're in the same boat. I'm 30 and single. I don't know, how old are you? Do you mind me asking?
30 and single, yeah.
Oh my God, we have so much overlap. It's crazy. But for sure, you're saying like the woman is chosen. And I think that that's such a piece of it. And I do think, like I've spoken about this on the podcast before, but it's so stemmed from Disney for us, where we have to be chosen. Because I tell everyone, I'm like a lover girl. I feel like I've had a crush since I was like 4. Like I don't remember a time where I didn't have a crush. You know, like as soon as I could walk, I had a crush.
Yes.
And it's like weird. Like, and then I sometimes go on these deep down, like I go on these rabbit holes and I'm like, it's not from like my daddy issues and it's not from like the overweight thing. Like what is it? And maybe it is that society was perpetuating to me at 4 years old. I watched Cinderella get chosen by the prince and I'm like, I want that. Like I watch Ryan Gosling in any movie and I'm obsessed with him.
Same, girl. And even like those 90s rom-coms, right? Like Never Been Kissed, like Drew Barrymore's portraying this girl where she's never been kissed. So who is she without having been kissed? And then her whole journey, it's just all of these rom-coms. It's about the woman being saved by some kind of man and filling this void that is obviously abundant and open. So I think it's so ingrained in us and it makes us crave to be chosen. And I think because of that, on top of many other variables, it's like we become people pleasers and we think we can change him and we think that we need to be saved and we're hopeless romantics. I think it's just so multifaceted. It's kind of scary. It's scary.
Yeah. And you brought up Never Been Kissed. And I had this like tinge of memory of, I feel like when I watched it, I was like, oh, like she's the chubbier girl that like is going to be with Michael Vartan. And I was like, oh my God, cool. Like I resonate. Like I could have that guy that hot, which is so messed up in its own way. But I'm curious for you, when you are going to the weddings and you are watching everyone be chosen, and obviously there is this human need for connection and we do want relationships, how do you quiet the noise? Like, where do you go to then for peace?
That's a great question. I want to say it bothered me a few years ago, especially when the relationship was fresh. I actually remember I was a bridesmaid in one of my friend's weddings as the miscarriage was going on. And that was absolutely miserable. And I didn't want to detract from her wedding at all, but I was so not in it. So that I think is like a very extreme type of situation. But moving forward, like years later now, 3 years later, I'm actually okay with it. And I don't want to sound like I'm okay actually being single. And I'm okay if it takes me 10 years to meet someone or 15 or maybe never, which I hope isn't the case. I don't want to put out there, but I actually have created like such a sanctuary within my apartment walls. And I'm just so happy with who I am and what I do. But again, I'd be lying if I said that there's not days where I'm like, oh my God, it's Valentine's Day and I'm alone, or oh my God, it's New Year's and I'm just kissing a glass of wine. Like, you know, it gets a little lonely, but I think to quiet the noise, it's just like, whenever the time is ready for you, as long as I'm pouring in the love into myself and I feel full myself, that's all I can ask for. And then I find love too within my friendships. I have beautiful friends and within, you know, familial love. So I feel full in every other aspect of my life. I think that's just the one notch that's kind of missing for now, but it's okay.
Yeah. I feel like I know your friends after reading the book too. Like,
they're the best.
Yeah. Scarlett. I don't know if she's real, but Scarlett in the book. How do you feel about, I go back and forth on this. I mean, your friends are like getting into, you know, marriages and having kids. Like, do you think as a single woman, you spend a lot of time with those people, or is it good to kind of have single girlfriends? Like, where do you fall on that?
That's a great question too, because I feel like sometimes it's different. They're celebrating milestones that I necessarily can't relate to, but I'm proud of, right? Like, they'll be posting, oh my God, my baby just learned how to like roll over. And I'm like, that's beautiful, but I can't relate, you know? But like, I'm sure maybe one day if that's in my cards, I'll be like, I remember when you posted little Savannah rolling over. But I think we still hang out. And when it's just us and it's girl time, it's, I feel like I'm a kid again, right? But I do think we have to grow and evolve and understand that they have different goals and milestones that they have to, you know, they're looking to reach, and I'm there supporting them every step of the way. But then they also have to recognize, like, when the book came out, they were the biggest supporters. So I don't know. It's a nice balance though, because I do have a lot of my friends who are married or who are getting married and who have kids. And then I do have a handful of single friends, not many, but there are some of us. And we can kind of relate and just express some of our frustrations when it comes to being single on certain days when I'm feeling low. And I'm like, damn, I just want flowers on Valentine's Day. And then we'll send each other flowers. So it's like, it's nice. I think you need to have a mix. It's always nice to have a healthy balance.
Yeah. I mean, balance is everything. I think that for me, like, whenever people write into me and they say that, you know, they can't meet friends or all their friends are getting married, I'm a huge proponent of spending time not just with your married friend. Like, do not be, because I have fallen into that where I'm the fifth wheel, I'm the third wheel. I think that there are seasons for those friendships. Like, right now, my friends with kids who are married, we're probably not as close today. But that doesn't mean I love them any less. It means that in 5 years, 10 years, we'll reconvene when it's, you know, when the time is right. But right now, we're just in different places, and that's okay. Like, we can love each other from afar, if that makes sense.
It does. And I also think too, if you hang out with your married friends and they're all married and you are the fifth wheel or the seventh wheel or the ninth wheel, you're not also, if your intention is to go out there and maybe put yourself in a situation where you'll meet someone and you're going to the same house parties over and over with the same people. I mean, you can go. I'm not saying don't go, but I'm saying maybe divvy it up a little bit, because if you're going there, you're not setting yourself up for success to potentially meet someone. So I do think you need friends in different walks of life to just bring you into new experiences and just kind of make you feel rounded out and full. And I think all different friends, a mother can give you certain advice or guidance versus a wife versus a single friend versus the entrepreneur. So I like to hang out with all different types of friends, but I do agree that sometimes there can be some distance when you're not on the same life path, but that's okay as long as you just respect and understand, but still show up when needed.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask you, I want to pivot. We were talking about bodies, and I had this question for you as I'm reading the book. How do you feel about the word curvy?
Curvy?
Yeah. As someone who has like struggled with their weight, how do you feel about it?
I don't mind it. I like calling myself curvy. I like calling myself, actually, my new thing is I call myself a Renaissance painting. Like, I have a little, like, I have a little belly and it's okay. But I actually went to Italy a few years ago and I'm looking at all of the beautiful women painted on these cathedral walls. And I'm like, they are thick and curvy and beautiful, and that is me. So I don't mind it, but I can see how some other women may not like it, but I don't mind it at all.
Yeah, I like Renaissance painting a lot. I don't like curvy. It's a trigger word for me. I don't know. I don't like it at all. Yeah, that's definitely like my shame probably. But whenever, like, I don't know, whenever a guy is like, you're curvy, I'm like, it feels fetishizey. It just feels a little, I don't know.
Thick too. Thick is a word that I think, depending on how you deliver it, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it feels that way. How do you feel about your body today? Like, are you at peace with it? Do you love it? Like, are there any tips you can give to someone who struggles with body love?
I go back and forth. I think body dysmorphia is something I'm always going to battle. And I actually bring it up in therapy quite frequently still. And my therapist is like, Brie, name a woman who doesn't want to change something about their body and let me know. She's like, because every single person that you admire, or the Kardashians, I'm sure there's something they hate about their body. She's like, you just have to love your body, because beauty is truly in the eye of the beholder, and you have to have the eye to love your own self and find beauty in yourself. So for me, I struggle with it. And I have like a very unhealthy relationship with food. So during the holidays, girl, I was binging. Charcuterie boards were my enemy, but frenemy. So I definitely gained a little bit, but I've been back in the gym. I feel healthier. So now my perspective is just, I want to feel healthy. I don't necessarily care how I look. I just want to feel healthy and active and mobile, and like my body can just move. So I go about it more, you know, motion is lotion, girl. Like, let's get moving. But when I look at myself naked in the mirror, which is what I do pretty much every day, I'll just be like, you know what? Maybe you do have boobs that aren't perky and beautiful or the same size. And like, it's okay, because Renaissance painting. So like, literally, that's just what I keep reminding myself. So I'm just giving myself grace. There's days that I don't love my body, but I like it, but I never want to allow myself to get to the point where I hate it, because that's a serious like personal red flag for me. So I teeter between like and love.
Yeah. I like that exercise of looking in the mirror every day. Not easy. Like today, I ate like so badly yesterday, and I was putting on lotion. And I was like avoiding the mirror. I was like, no, bitch, you're looking in the mirror.
Get in. Yes.
Yeah. Tap in. Yeah. 100%. And I like that moving. I feel like my body, as long as I move it, it feels good. And that isn't, I'm not like exhausting myself. I might be going to yoga. I might be taking a walk. It is just moving your body.
Yeah. That's how I want to look at it. I just think there's no standard of perfection. So it's like, why am I beating myself up and being my own worst enemy to be something that my body clearly is not, and hoping to be something else that there's still critics saying that body that I'm admiring to be is not perfect. So it's just like, you have to love and embrace yourself and just do all the mental exercises to get there, whether that be meditation, yoga, going to therapy, positive affirmations in the mirror, like whatever it is, just you're beautiful how you are. And then if you don't feel the best, then do whatever you can to kind of tweak it.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk to you about sexual intimacy, because I feel like the book, you were very open about different sexual things. I literally laughed out loud because you told a story about, and I don't know if anyone who's listening knows like Salesforce jargon. I worked in like partnerships and sales, and you said that a man slacked you or like messaged you to say that he wanted to closed lost your vagina, which is hilarious. I need to text my friend who, like, we all used Salesforce, and it is hilarious because like you move it. So you'll be like prospect
closed one. Yeah.
Closed one. Yeah. That was so funny. But I'm curious how, I feel like something that I struggle with, and maybe other women too, I'm not like proud of this, but I think that we should talk about it. I think it's really hard in the heat of the moment to put up boundaries and to say what you want and to ask to use protection and to have those conversations in the heat of the moment. It feels like you're someone who is very comfortable with that. If someone's listening and they're not able, like, how do you communicate that in the heat of the moment where you're like, here's where I feel comfortable?
I think to take a step back, I don't think if you don't feel comfortable with that person asking them to use protection or whatever it is that you're envisioning, if you don't feel comfortable to ask a question like that, I don't think you should be comfortable enough to give your body to them in that type of scenario. I've done it. I've been there where I have allowed somebody, just because, again, like, you feel desired and wanted and hot, and you're just like, the pheromones are there and you're just like, let's get at it. And then maybe I didn't feel so comfortable. But then in retrospect, I look back the next day and I'm like, what the hell did I just do? So I'm at a point where if I want to get intimate with someone, and I've been kind of practicing celibacy a little bit, but we can talk about that too. If you're at a point where you want to get with someone, I do think sexual health should be communicated. And I think that should be made a priority, whether it's you're on birth control or you're not on birth control, because I think the guy has a right to know too. Or, you know, I will only do this if we have, you know, protection, or I don't feel comfortable doing this physician or that. I think these are things that you just, as you're getting ready or as you're talking to the person, I just think just need to feel confident enough to communicate, because at the end of the day, it is your body. You play a role in this too. So, yeah.
I think in an ideal world, like, you are talking about it on the date, right? But like, you also don't want someone to be presumptuous that you're going to sleep with them. So it's this delicate balance. It is this delicate balance. But I think that it's sexy to talk about it, because if you think about it, two people are on a date with the intention of potentially getting physically intimate at a certain point. So it's like, you don't have to be talking about it that, like, you don't have to say, we're going to have sex tonight and here's what's going to go down. But if we're having sex, here's how it's going to go down. I think that that might be the appropriate venue for it.
I agree. And I also think too, if, you know, as the female, you can carry a condom if that's what makes you feel comfortable too. So there's steps you can do. And then if it's getting hot and heavy, just take a pause and be like, hey, you know, let's put this on really quick, or whatever the case is, and then just keep it moving. So you can take proactive approaches.
Let's talk about your celibacy thing.
Yeah. So girl, I've been celibate for, it's been like a year and
wow.
Yeah, a little over a year, which is, I think I needed to do it because as I was writing the book, I was still a red flag in my own right. I'll be completely honest. Like, I was still going after these guys who were just not good for me. And my friends were like, girl, you're writing a book about the red flags you've ignored and you're still ignoring the red flags. Like, practice what you preach. And I'm like, you're right. I'm like, let's do this. So I ended up hooking up with this one guy, and this was kind of like the cherry on top. So I ended up hooking up with this one guy that I worked out with at the gym. We had like a really nice friendship, but then he ended up just, it was messy. Like, he had an ex who would stalk me and message me. And it was like, I'm in my late 20s, almost 30s, and I am dealing with things that seem high school level to me. And then he would just pop up at my house when I wasn't expected. So it was like, it was getting a little creepy. So at a certain point, I was like, I can't do this anymore. And again, Brie, what is going on with you where you're allowing this at this stature of your life? So I was like, I'm going cold turkey from sex. Like, I'm not hooking up with anybody. Like, let's heal. I literally went to a witch store. I got a thing of sage. I like went around. I was like, I'm saging all the negative energy out of here. But at first I just did it because I wanted to kind of cleanse myself and I wanted to recalibrate and not focus so heavily on sex for me. And now it's getting to a point where I love sex. If you want to have sex, go do it. But for me, I'm like, I've protected myself so long and I've created almost a sanctuary within me that the next time that I'm physical with someone, I'm hoping that it's a person of worth that I'm allowing in. So that's kind of like the mental behind it.
Do you go on dates right now?
I have been on dates. Yeah, some of them are great, but just not the person for me. Some of them are just not good at all. But there's been no one that has led to multiple dates that eventually led to some kind of intimate type of setting. But yeah, I go on dates. It's hard though, girl. It's hard.
Like from the apps, right?
No, I actually don't want to go on apps only because I don't have the time. Like I'm on my phone too much. So I don't want to spend any more time than I already have to for work and stuff on my phone. So I try to meet people out, whether I go to a comedy club and I'm sitting at a bar, or whether it be just mutual friends who have single other connections and we'll meet through word of mouth. So that's how I go on dates. It's not the most efficient, I'll be honest, but it's nice. I like it. It's more organic for me.
It sounds like, and I relate to this, it sounds like in your 20s, you were kind of like go, go, go with male validation, sleeping with men. Like, I feel you on that. And now you're like, let's slow it down, because where did that get me? I'm 30 and single, and I just met a bunch of guys with a lot of red flags.
Correct. Yeah. It's nice though. It's kind of, I was like speeding down the parkway in my 20s, and now I'm like, I'm cruising in the right lane now. Like, I don't need to rush to get anywhere. I'm kind of just going at the pace that I'm setting, which feels really empowering.
I'm really curious if, because like Gen Z now has people like us who are creating content on the internet, like the Tinkses of the world, dating coaches, if they are going to be more healed, or you just have to do that in your 20s. Like, that just happens to all of us. Like, I'm curious where Gen Z is going to land?
In terms of their healing or?
Yeah, like, are they going to be married by 30 and be really in secure relationships and have secure attachment styles? Or are they never going to, like, get married? Like, what, you know, what are their relationships going to look like? Because I feel like our parents' generation, it was divorces. It scared all of us into not, you know, settling down and have this paradox of choice. I'm wondering where Gen Z is going to land on the relationship spectrum.
That's a good, I don't know. But it's interesting because a lot of, I was actually just having this conversation yesterday. I'm like, I'm single in my 30s. Most people, it's hard dating right now, other 30-year-olds, because there's not many left. Well, there's a lot left, but I feel like I'm one of those people at the beach, like sifting for gold, and I'm like sifting through the sand, hoping to find a treasure. It's like, it's out there, but it's hard. So I think there were some people I know in their 20s who dated in college or even high school, and they ended up getting married and it's secure and healthy. But there's other people who waited until their first full-time job. So I don't know. I think with social media too, I don't know. I do think though, I encourage anybody who wants healthy, secure love to just, you have to experience, not experience everything I experienced, right? Like I'm definitely heeding against that, but go out and have fun and be safe with it. Definitely read like a book like mine or other things or other experiences and learn what you probably shouldn't do, but just put yourself out there and figure out what you're looking for. I don't want to like generationally stereotype. I don't really, I think it's on like a case by case basis, but I do think they have factors of social media that play a bigger role now and a bigger influence than when we were kids. So dating could be very hard because now I think there's even more of an abundance of choice online, or so it perceives to be. So that could be an interesting factor.
Yeah, I agree. I made a video yesterday that went viral because Kristen Cavallari hard launched her 24-year-old boyfriend and she's 37.
I saw your video.
And I'm like, would you date someone 7 years younger? Like, would you date someone younger?
I think I would. I would date somebody older. Like, I'm not opposed to dating some. Would you date somebody older, though, with kids or no? Is that another question for you?
No. You know what? I dated someone who had a kid. And I think it's now at 30 a consideration, but I think it would have to be really right.
Yeah. And now, sorry if it's personal. Do you want kids of your own or?
I'm not sure. So I'm not. Yeah. I think we're all like this now where I'm like, I don't know. I love my life so much. And yeah, it's tough. But I think I definitely do want to freeze my eggs so that I don't regret not having the ability to later.
Same. I feel like we just became best friends. I would definitely date somebody older and I would date somebody younger, but I think it just matters on their maturity level and how emotionally intelligent they are. So for me, I think age is just a number. Like, my mom literally is getting married to somebody who's like 12 years younger than her. And the way that they compliment each other, like not verbally, but like, you know, compliment, it's just, it's beautiful. And I'm like, at first I was really hesitant because I'm like, mom, like get someone your own age. Like, what the hell are you doing? But I just think age, it's just all about how you present as a person and what's inside. So I wouldn't be opposed.
I wouldn't either, which just goes to show that all the things that I thought were the ways, there are no rules. It's truly fluid.
It is. It is. Life is crazy, but we're all learning as we go.
Totally. Life is really crazy. Okay. I would be remiss if I didn't talk to you about red flags, given your book. What are your biggest red flags from the book, even just in general? Maybe they've changed since you've written the book.
So I would say a big red flag is if you find yourself, and this is like a personal red flag, right? But if you find yourself snooping through your partner's phone at any point in the relationship, huge red flag on both you and also them, because why are you with someone that makes you have to invade somebody's privacy? But also why are you with someone at the core that you don't trust? So that is a huge, huge red flag. And I think we rationalize it by saying, oh, people do it, or, you know, I just want to check and clear my conscience. But truthfully, you should love yourself and respect the person you're with enough to not have to do that. So that's a huge, huge red flag. I cannot stress enough. Another one is if you feel like you're changing in a relationship for someone, and I say that with the caveat that your friends and your lovers should have influence on your life, but hopefully healthy, positive influences, right? But if you find yourself changing who you are at your core for someone, that's a huge red flag. So I guess an example would be my ex during COVID got like incredibly political. I don't know if you got to that chapter, and he was doing, and it was wild. I literally felt like I was living in a freaking documentary. It was wild. So the things that I was exposing myself to that went against my core beliefs and values and philosophies as a person, but I was doing anyway because I so desperately just wanted to be with this person, not even that person, but just wanted to be, in a relationship. That's a huge red flag. So check yourself and just make sure you're not doing anything that feels out of character for you.
That's a great point. I feel like in all of my 20s, and I've talked about this before, I used to lead so heavily with the fact that I liked basketball because I thought that guys would love that. And I don't even watch basketball anymore. I mean, I love it because I watched it with my dad growing up and it's kind of nostalgic, but I swear it was something I adopted to be a pick me girl. And I ended up dating a guy who was a personal trainer for basketball players. And I was like meeting athletes. And I was like, you guys, like, hey, but I manifested the wrong thing. Like I didn't.
That is hysterical. That is so good.
Yeah. Horrible. Horrible.
That's so funny. What else? This is one I call out in the book, but it's also, it's kind of going viral. But if he calls all of his exes crazy, that's a huge, I cannot stress that enough. That's a huge red flag because I feel like, number one, why are you talking about them in a disrespectful way? Number two, why are literally all of your exes crazy? Like, what does that say about you for attracting and retaining exes of that caliber? I just think it's disrespectful. I think that it's just not a good look. That's a huge, huge red flag to me.
I just finished that chapter. He was a guy who was like, I have a kid. Like you were out at the club with him and his phone background was a baby. And you were like, oh, is that your kid? And like, he was just born. Do you think he was still with the woman?
Definitely. Probably. Probably. Yeah. Because I'll be honest, I don't follow any of them on social media anymore. But when I was still kind of like tinkering with this guy, I followed him for a bit of time and I saw that they'd be back for holidays and this and that, and they were trying. So yeah, I think she was in the picture. I think it was a band-aid.
Yeah, he called his ex crazy. Do you think that we subconsciously go for like the bad guy with the red flags because we're either afraid of emotional intimacy or we're emotionally unavailable? Like, do you think that that is at the root of it? Because as I was reading that, I was like, I feel like I've been in this situation before. And I think that it's because I'm avoiding emotional intimacy with the guy who's completely evolved.
1000%. Because now, if I look back, if I saw that guy, the same guy, like I would be, I don't want to sound mean, but I would just be so turned off or like disgusted that you're talking this way or acting this way or behaving this way that I would not give you access to my life anymore. So it's a reflection of you, your choices and men, because I think you're meeting people where you think you are. I obviously viewed myself very lowly. Yeah, which wasn't good.
What do you want now? Like, what are you looking for right now? Like, if you would say like the top five qualities you're looking for in someone, what are they?
I think communication, somebody who's a great, healthy communicator. And I also mean that in the sense that if something is uncomfortable or something needs to be said, you know, they are able to do that in an effective and efficient way that we can move past that hurdle. So communication, somebody who is trustworthy and respectable. I think somebody who comes from a good family. I say this selfishly for me only because I feel like I have a very small family. It's literally just like me and my mom at this point. So I would love that like family dynamic where we have family traditions. That's just something I'm yearning for. Somebody who is intelligent and witty, because I like to be stimulated mentally. That's like a huge thing for me. And we need that intimacy level. But by intimacy, I mean, we share and communicate what our love languages are. So for me as a writer, it's obviously like words of affirmation, but I'm also like huge into physical touch. So I would hope that I meet somebody who is able to give and receive. And, you know, it's like this mutual, you fill me, I fill you type of thing. So that's what I'm looking for. And you mentioned attachment styles. I was incredibly anxiously attached to every single person that I dated. And I feel it's very hard to be securely attached, but that's definitely the goal. So I want to be with someone where I'm as close, if not in the bubble of being securely attached. So that's the goal for me. But what about for you?
Pretty similar. It's funny. Through this podcast, I've learned that you can't be completely securely attached. So don't worry if you're not fully there. I think everyone is ever evolving, but I know what you mean. You'd rather be closer to secure than anxious. I think I'm similar. My most important question for you as you were speaking, are you an earth sign?
I am a Libra.
No way. I didn't see that for you.
Yeah.
You must have some Virgo in your chart because we're so similar. I feel like for me too, like I did like a question and answer and I answered this. I want someone who's funny, has a great sense of humor, values communication, ambitious. What else did I say? Oh, open-minded and like loves to travel. I think like for me, those are my five. And I've done this new practice where there was just a new moon and I manifested. I'm honestly like not manifesting a man right now. I'm maybe manifesting like a really great connection and maybe like physical intimacy, but I don't know that I want a boyfriend right now. I don't know that I'm like mentally as prepared for it, but I wrote all these things down and I now sleep with it under my pillow.
I love that. My mom would be very proud. My mom is like totally into that stuff too. So I love that. Yeah.
Well, she manifested her young guy.
She did. I need to ask her if she did this under a new moon.
That's so funny.
That is.
Brianna, I want you to come visit Austin, or I feel like are you based in New York?
I'm in Jersey, but like super close to New York, but I would definitely take you up on that. I need to travel. So yes, I will hit you up.
Yes, I could talk to you forever, but tell everyone where they can find you and also buy your book.
Oh, also love your red nails.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. So you can find me on any social media at The Brianna McCabe. My book, The Red Flags I've Repeatedly Ignored, it's available on Amazon, on my website, also in Barnes & Noble, Walmart, only hardcover for now. Ebook is available globally everywhere on any e-reading device. And I'm working on my audiobook. It's taking forever to edit. I'm so particular, but that will be coming out soon too. So for all of you podcast listeners out there, hopefully that'll be your vibe.
I love that it's hardcover. I just told you it's a great coffee table book. So everyone, I hope you buy it. It's so cute.
Thank you for reading it. I'm so blessed to have connected with you. Like this made me so happy.
Me too. I'm so happy. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Pretty Much Done. If you want more information about this episode, you can check our show notes. Go like, subscribe, and leave a review because it helps us grow the pod. Love you. Thank you. Sorry, did I just love bomb you? I'm not toxic. You are. Okay, bye.